Now, we're going to return, God, do we ever get away from it, but it is pretty important to Brexit, and focus on the impact it could have on consumers and on business. And we're joined by Graham Parker, as CEO and co-founder of Container, and Liz Fulton, who's CEO of Sales Optimize. I'm going to start with you, Graham. If we are shipping either live animals or meat across to our nearest neighbours, what'll be the process? How do you know where the cattle came from, where the meat came from, where all of that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think the challenge really, Ryan, is around if it's a hard Brexit in October, then it becomes very challenging. WTO tariffs kick in, new customs declarations will arrive. And at the moment, nobody really knows what's going to be involved until we have clarity on what's going to be on a customs declaration. As a software company like Containers, we can't actually build anything. So I think it's very challenging.
You've been approached by both sides.
We have indeed.
Yeah, to advise on this. But you made the point you can't because you don't know what you're dealing with.
That's the problem. So, you know, we build software and we can deliver custom solutions off the shelf, but no one knows what's going to be involved. So if you have a truck coming off a ferry in Dublin Port in November in a hard Brexit scenario, nobody knows what's going to be involved. You could have a WTO tariff on you know, T-shirts that are, it's 20%. No one knows what's going to be involved in the customs declaration. So it could be really difficult. And that's, I think, one of the biggest challenges. You know, there's 13 kilometres of trucks come off in Dublin Port every morning, and that's repeated four times a day. So if you have a slowdown of just, you know, 15 minutes, it's, you know, a significant issue in the port.
Right. And you make the point that one container could have a whole heap of things within it. Diverse things in smaller amounts.
Yeah, so if you imagine, you know, you're looking at a ferry and you can see all of these trucks, you can have a ferry that's going, you know, directly into a warehouse and it's got one product on. But the next truck could be what they call groupage containers. So you could have, you know, a pallet of lawnmowers going to Woody's DIY. You could have two pallets of books going to Eason's, a pallet of napkins going into a hospital. And every single shipment will have to have its own customs declaration. So that truck comes to go out of the port, and one of the 47 shipments doesn't have a customs declaration, every single one of them is held up. So it becomes very difficult, and these are the type of scenarios that we're thinking about now. And again, as October looms, you can't really do much until we know what we're dealing with. Is it going to be hard Brexit? Is it going to be agreement?
You're talking about things like lawnmowers. In a different life, my father worked in refrigerated freight. So talking if you have pallets of cheese and
even more difficult.
Things that are perishable. You're talking, my dad tells some really interesting stories. If a few pallets go missing, if something goes wrong at the port and a truck driver goes the wrong way and you end up with cheese in one factory when it's meant to be milk, and you have milk in the other factory meant to be cheese, and that's such a problem. Whereas
super difficult.
If you're talking, these are daily or problems coming up every 15 minutes, it's absolutely chaos.
And what about the drivers? I mean, is a Polish driver licensed and insured to drive across England at the moment, or will all of that have to be dealt with as well?
Well, because we're advised now, all of us, are we not, that if you want, that we have to get cards to go to Northern Ireland. Yeah. I don't understand that, because if you can go and hire a car in Italy, you don't need a...
Yeah, I think the challenge is that, you know, right now you've got free movement of goods because we're going to the EU and we go to the UK, but post that, regardless of what happens, it's going to be a third country, which means you have to do a customs declaration, and there could be scenarios where, you know, more regulations comes in for drivers in insurance, and it comes in terms of identification. And I think it, you know, there's so many different areas that you have to look at, and I think from the driver side there's a lot of great courses going on to help them, but the uncertainty just doesn't help, and no one still knows, you know, what's going to happen in October.
Now, Liz, you tell me about your company and what you do for people.
Yeah, so we're a data science company, and we analyse the internet like Google does for business. We do the Google for business. So we tell you how many businesses are online and who is your potential market. And then we also get you a list of all the customers that you could sell to.
In Ireland, in Britain, how will this be influenced by Brexit?
So we're lucky in that we will have minimum impact on us for Brexit. But where it will hit the average householder is it couldn't happen at a worse time. So 60% of all e-commerce sales are done in the last 3 months of the year. So if a hard Brexit hits and you place an order on a UK e-commerce site, which is where a lot of people buy from, and you buy that next outfit from Pretty Little Thing, or you buy that must-have present for your wife, it, chances are, it's a parcel in a box on top of millions of boxes that have to be custom cleared. The chances are you're not going to get it by Christmas. There could be such a backlog of boxes clearing the warehouses. Because we're talking about containers that have four different pallets. You're talking about hundreds of thousands of boxes coming in every week from the UK, which is now a third country, with different types of products, with different types of tariffs on them.
Could that be good for the retail sector here?
Oh, it'd be very good. So it's good and bad because it takes the time for a transition. Yeah. So first of all, you have to experience the problem before you realise that now I need a solution, before you realise I want to shop with retailers on the high street. So if you suddenly have placed your order and it's not coming and you have your track and you see it's stock and then you have to still go and buy that present, you'll go back into the retailers for sure. But, you know, it also could mean that your Christmas isn't your Christmas because you spent your money with a retailer in the UK and you haven't got the product.
Yeah, it could be a silver lining nonetheless. I mean, most things had. What would you say, Seamus?
A great excuse for forgotten presents.
Something like, if it does happen that there is this crash out on the 31st, well, there's no doubt there would be this type of short-term disruption that is presented there. And whether it's coming to products being delivered by the post or even just the normal supply chain. So a lot of these products could come from the UK anyway. And I think getting them in through containers, there could be issues and delays for a number of weeks. But I think I suggest that once these problems arise, solutions to these things will be found. Like, businesses, by their nature, are adaptive and they face changes on a daily basis. So I think these type of issues could present pretty significant problems, but they would be short-term.
I think
that the more longer-term issues are about access to markets and the trading relationship and how that develops over a matter of years. But I do think if there was to be, I still think it's unlikely, if there was to be this crash out on the 31st of October, there would be that type of short-term disruption.
But that's the point. Is that short-term disruption couldn't happen at a worse time. It's happening right on top of Christmas. You know, if you had that happen during the middle of the year, we'd all adjust for it. You know, we'd all go down to the local retailer. But we saw the shortages that we saw with the snow when we didn't have any fresh fruit and stuff like that. That won't be what will happen here because we'll have our fresh fruit and we'll have our fresh meat. But you will find some shortages on food items that are coming in from the UK. The ones I would say in the shortage would be things that you think about would be cereal, baby food, things like that. So there is a lot of food that you could then make alternative choices in Ireland and buy Irish versions. But again, you need to be aware of what are those shortages, what could they be?
Well, as you were saying there, flour is one of them.
Yeah, flour. We import 95% of our flour in Ireland. So that's, you know, entirety of breads, biscuits, cereals. There's a lot of stuff that won't get made in Ireland. For
all of our sugar, we don't make sugar.
Yeah, we don't. Yeah. There's, and then on the other side, we export like pretty much all of our mushrooms, like all the mushrooms that we grow here. We export. I think it's over 80% of them. So on the other side, there'll be that as well. We'll have too many mushrooms if we're not able to sell them into the UK. And obviously, mushroom factories are already feeling that. I think they were the first people to feel it after the 2016.
They were. Yeah.
And I think that's the problem. And Seamus, you might know more. If those short term impacts, they will fix. But I presume a lot of smaller businesses will go under because they can't take that short-term shock, even if it's 3 to 6
months.
The
ones that are talking most about the shock, obviously, are the farmers and cheese producers and so on and so forth. You saw that article in the Business Post with Lucinda Creighton talking about TDs emulating Little England in their reaction to the Mercosur deal.
Yeah, so it's a completely hypocritical approach being taken in Ireland to trade. On the one hand, we're talking about our concerns about maintaining trade with the UK and keeping the UK open for Irish markets. And then we have took 19 years to get as far as agreeing the principles of this EU trade deal with Mercosur, the southern common market, four main countries in South America. And within days of just the principles being published, we had a vote in the Dáil that was 2-1 opposing the deal on very narrow grounds. And Ireland is a country which over the last 40 or 50 years, much of our increase in living standards has been based on trade. And it seems remarkable that we have an elected parliament where the snap reaction is a vote 2-1 against a trade deal with quite a large market that at present we have very limited dealings with, and perhaps we should be looking to open up. So it is sort of a two-faced and hypocritical approach that on the one hand, we're all how we maintain trade with the UK, we want to keep markets open. And then on the other side, when it comes to something like South America, we're saying, how do we keep the markets closed?
Right. Well, I mean, you could know all the arguments that you might get from farmers, but we do go on and on and on about being an open economy.
Oh, yeah, and the arguments the farmers made, many of them are wrong. So in one instance, they're arguing that the agreement in principle sets out that 100,000 tonnes of beef from South America entering the EU. Well, last year the EU imported 200,000 tonnes of beef from South America, albeit at quite a high tariff. The tariff at beef and present from South America is between 40 and 45%, depending on the nature of the product and the cut. Mm-hmm. And what the proposal is, that just under 100,000 tonnes would come in at a much lower tariff, a tariff of 7.5%. So it's just reducing the tariff on a certain amount up to that limit. And once it goes over the 100,000, then the tariff would be 40 or 45% again. But you can get South American beef in Europe. I think very little is imported into Ireland, but it is available on the continent. And it has to adhere to the same food safety, the same food labelling, the same food standards as product produced within the EU. So it's not as if the case that these standards aren't adhered to, like toys manufactured in China have to adhere to EU standards, beef produced in South America for consumption in the European market, but also have to adhere to it. And the amount is quite low. This 100,000 is just over 1% of the EU beef market. And if you offer the beef farmers in Ireland, say, look, we won't allow the Mercosur deal to go through, well, let's save your industry, they'll all say no. Like, they've long-standing and far more serious issues that are there. And the issue with this trade agreement is the benefits that it has for everybody else, for those workers in other industries who might be able to access the South American markets, particularly maybe indigenous Irish companies and also the foreign companies who set up in Ireland. Access to those markets could be beneficial. And, of course, Irish consumers, who perhaps get products at cheaper prices. So I think we have a quite narrow and limited focus that led to an amazing vote in the Dáil, where the benefits of trade should be something that Ireland should be very well aware of.
Michael?
Well, there's another aspect to it. I mean, I agree with James's point that, I mean, we're great at calling our people in America undocumented and their people here illegal. You know, that's the way the world works, and the Irish are very good at that. And it's true to say that the IFA has huge clout. You know, I mean, it can organise a mass demonstration within hours, really, whereas nobody else, I don't think even a trade union and certainly no political party could get 1,000 people into Kildare Street just like that. So I agree with those points, and we have to take a slightly broader point.
But I do want to... Seamus' point too about cynicism and hypocrisy and how much this has to do with getting votes at the next general election as opposed to the welfare of the country.
I mean, what amazed me was how quickly even Phil Hogan was being thrown under the bus for involvement in this by Fine Gael people. It was astonishing. The one thing I would say, and it's a slightly different view of it, and that is President Bolsonaro in Brazil is busily authorising the destruction of the rainforest for agricultural purposes and for mineral exploration and the like. And I do think that, and this Mercosur thing has 2 years to go anyway, but I think that the EU should put some manners on him by saying that it's a condition precedent to any deal.
Right.
That he saves the rainforest, because it's the only leverage we have on him, and he's a man, he's very much his own man, and he's sort of in the Duterte Trump mode. But if he understands that it could hit Brazil in the pocket, then he might do something about it.
The question is, how do you police it? Can I come back to you on transport and portage and all of that? If you have livestock, you know, how do you have to check every individual animal?
Yeah, I mean, it's heavily regulated compared to standard freight. So you have livestock vessels. There was one recently where there was an accident off the coast of South America, and there was consternation about it. But in general terms, it's very well documented. So there's a series of vets for every vessel before it leaves the port. Every animal is checked.
Every animal is checked. Are they blood tested?
I'm not 100% sure if they're blood tested, but there's a series of vets that go on board the vessels as well to make sure that they're okay during transit as well.
That must take forever.
It does. It takes quite a while. Every vessel has a series of, significant documentation that ensures every animal is okay. But I think, just taking it from an agricultural perspective, 87% of our cheddar cheese is exported to the UK right now. And, you know, we export 90% of our beef and half of that goes to the UK. But we see a lot of, typical ingenuity from Irish exporters as well, where they're looking beyond the UK already and looking at markets like France and Germany. They're doing bigger deals in there. They're concentrating less on the UK, regardless of the outcome. And they're looking at UK, they're looking at China, they're looking at other big markets and,
But I'll just add to that, because I worked in the meat industry.
Yeah.
And they're well versed on how to do paperwork, especially because a lot of beef goes into the Middle East. So they know how to deal with third countries. It's just the lack of clarity, is the UK a third country or not?
Well,
because their paperwork is there. Yeah, the paperwork, the printers, the people are there. They have the knowledge, they have the expertise. They just need to know how to classify the UK. Once you figure out how you're going to classify the UK, then they'll put everything in motion, all the big producers. They have it all down pat because they're already exporting into North Africa and the Middle East and into other places.
But what about the land border between us and Northern Ireland?
I agree that's an issue. Thing, yeah. But, if you think about the scale of the exports into the UK, that's not going to suddenly dry up. You still need to feed people. But what's going to cause problems if you don't give the clarity quickly enough to say to the producers and the exporters, that's the paperwork you need. Once you give them that clarity, they can put everything in motion. Yeah. They're clever people, they're well-oiled machines. Yeah. They're doing this every other day for the Middle East and for Africa. But I agree, Northern Ireland's a different question. But if you can get a fix for 90% of the problem, at least getting food into the UK because they're going to need it, that would give great certainty into the food sector. But you need the governments in the UK and Ireland to give that clarity, and they don't have it today. So they can't set those wheels in motion.
Well, it looks likely, if they go ahead, that it is a third country.
If it's a third country, then they have to agree the classifications that they need to put it into, agree the paperwork, and then once they've done that...
Is that not laid down already by WTO rules?
It depends on what they agree, and that's the problem. It's not black and white. They could come out with a handshake that you wouldn't expect. And that's the thing. Who knows what they're going to come out with? We don't know what that handshake is going to look like.
What are other people saying to you? I mean, I presume you're dealing with the British and with the rest of Europe as well.
Yeah.
Apart from the fact that nobody knows what's going to happen, except it would appear Boris Johnson.
he doesn't know what's in paragraph 5C.
that's right. Yes, I was going to come to you, but just... Sure. On those things of what he did know and he didn't know, paragraph 5C, I don't think they're talking about it over their cornflakes all around the country either, let it be said today. But are these rules that are laid down, or are they guidelines that you can then negotiate?
Well, the WTO is very general, and they are sort of guidelines, and they deal with trade between huge numbers of countries. So they're not very specific. And I think the fact that a candidate for the Prime Minister of the UK doesn't know what's in every paragraph in the overall treaties isn't much of an issue. I think it made for an entertaining exchange where he focused on one paragraph and he was quickly caught out by a skilled interviewer. But they're very general and it does require certain levels of agreement and perhaps handshakes that you might refer to. But the issue that the WTO tried to address is that countries don't offer preferential terms to different countries and they're not playing one country off the other. A general term in the WTO sort of framework would be most favoured nation. That whatever is the most preferential terms you offer to one nation, in general you have to offer that to everybody else. But it doesn't set out what those terms are. So the uncertainty will arise as to what sort of terms the UK goes for. I think one issue with when it comes to Irish exports to the UK is not necessarily that there might be high barriers to entry for Irish products into the UK, is that actually might be low barriers to entry. But then that would mean that the UK be open to all countries. So it could be that the Irish produce, whether it's meat, beef or dairy, faces competition from lower cost producers. So we might be able to get our products in. But if there's such a price differential that we can't get people to buy them, that could be a key issue. So for Ireland, it may be that we would like the UK to actually maintain reasonably high barriers and that we can be so proximate, can work through the detail as suggested over a number of weeks and get our products onto the shelf there.
That would also make alternative arrangements if it does come to that a bit easier as well, because the lower the barrier, the stricter the EU is going to be on our border between here and Northern Ireland.
I think the WTO tariffs can be very high as well. So when Brexit was initially supposed to occur earlier in the year in March, we saw UK exporters shipping cargo to, say, China, and it was going to arrive in April. And they would have had shipped that cargo and they didn't know what the tariff rate was going to be. If it had happened with a hard exit, they could have been selling car parts that, when the cargo left the UK, it could have been at 10%. When it arrived in China, if it went to a WTO tariff, it could have been gone up to 30%.
All their profit gone.
And that was literally, you know, literally hundreds of shipments that were leaving the UK in that period. And that's practically what's happening to exporters with this uncertainty.
Was it you that was quoted here or somebody else telling you that any time I tried to find a solution, I hit a brick wall?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of, you know, when people are trying to find a solution, put something in place, the uncertainty and the customs issue brings them back to having an issue. How can you put something in place when you don't know whether you're building towards a hard exit or an agreement with different countries? I think it's very difficult for Irish exporters, UK exporters, everybody to come up with something when there's so much.
So you seem very sanguine, don't you?
I wouldn't say sanguine. I'd say that in the face of uncertainty, there's an element of waiting. Mm-hmm. Because no matter how much you prepare as an exporter, you still need to know what paperwork you have to produce.
Right.
And they're not going to let any of these go across borders unless they have the appropriate paperwork.
You've said what you said about the livestock. What about milk, to quote a colleague earlier on in the year? I mean, the amount of movement between Northern Ireland and Ireland is remarkable. Yeah. How does that get checked?
Yeah, I mean, I think that goes back. That's a very difficult question as well, because you've got, you know, at the moment the trucks are moving freely between the north and the south, and I don't think anybody knows how you can police that one. It goes back to the question of how do the trucks move between? Is it going to be a hard border? I think a lot of companies we talk to in Northern Ireland are very nervous about this, because it's a big commodity for them.
Right.
You don't be paying every time you cross the border if you. Milk being produced and processed at different sites. You can't afford to pay in a tariff each time the truck goes over and across the border.
Also, you can't even afford that time. If there's a border, then that you can't afford that time either.
But it has a big impact on the UK's processing for baby food, because they import a vast majority of the milk from us, from Europe, for the production of baby food. So I was bemused on Paddy Power. They're taking bets on whether there's going to be rationing, and that's like 12-1. And it gets even funnier is, you know, you're going to see a baby boom. According to Paddy Power, it's a 3-1 bet that they're going to run out of contraceptives. So, you know, you're actually sitting there and you're talking about, you know, will I get my beef? You know, you might be getting something else that you want.
I just hope there's somebody sitting in departments going through all of these scenarios and categories and products, to back to our earlier point of the known knowns and the unknown unknowns, that somebody is trying to kind of map this out so that we are kind of aware of all the plan B scenarios.
See, I think what would be very cool is if one of the supermarkets did that for us.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the supermarkets are the custodian of getting product onto the shelf for us to be able to buy from. If they could, one of them come out and say, here's all the major products we import from the UK, here's the alternative Irish product, because it would be lovely to see the sales in Ireland. And if it isn't that product, here's the alternative product that you could get from Europe, you know, as we produce baby food in Ireland.
Right. So supermarkets, pay attention, please. On that note, we'll take a break.